Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And we are Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Woo! All right, so this episode, we are doing another Love, Death, and Robots special.
Yay!
Woohoo!
We're focusing on season three still.
Yes.
I think we said in our last episode that we would need to do a part two focusing on season three just because it was so jam-packed.
I mean, But I think one of the great things about Love, Death, and Robots is that we can pick any theme and pick any episodes that have a similar, that tie to whatever topic we want to.
Yeah. No, and honestly, like, I mean, each episode is so brilliantly done, in my opinion. Each story is so unique and different. We could, if we wanted to, just turn our entire podcast into like a Love, Death, and Robots like fan club. So
yes.
Yeah. So
well done. I mean, Netflix, I love the artistic freedom that they've given to all these animators to create something that is very, very imaginative.
Yeah.
And beautiful.
Yep. Agreed. Cool. So the theme that we're talking about is, we've decided to title it Life as We Don't Know It. But we're not talking about life as in society and the world around us. We're talking about actually like what constitutes a living thing.
Right.
So actually, Aman, can we, since we were just looking this up.
Yeah.
Can you first list out like what are currently the factors that need to be met in order to consider something that's living?
So when we look at the world, when scientists look at the world around us and they're trying to identify whether something is alive or not, a lot of times we just instinctively, you know, are like, yes, that's alive and that is not. But there is a scientific definition of life, and it means that you need to have certain characteristics, okay? You need to have the ability to use energy, whether it's from whether it's eating food, you know, photosynthesis or what have you, but to get and to use energy, to reproduce, and to grow and respond to change, meaning that you have a reaction to external stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so that's a very, very broad definition. Scientifically, when we look out to the stars, we're looking for and searching for life. We're looking for certain things that the Earth has that we expect would be necessary for life. You know, we would expect water, all right, on a planet to be able to sustain life. And we would expect the planet to be in the Goldilocks zone of whatever star it's orbiting. Mm-hmm. And the Goldilocks zone is sort of the area, the band around which a planet can exist around a star and maintain a temperature that we believe is not too extreme for life in one form or another. If the Earth were to fall outside of the Goldilocks zone, no life on this planet would be able to exist. It would either be too cold or it would be too hot, you know? And so that's where, you know, astronomers are searching for planets where life could potentially exist. But that is simply, those are simply the conditions of life as we know it, as we understand it, living here on planet Earth. And as the only intelligent, sentient creatures that we're aware of, you know? Mm-hmm. But what some of these episodes of Love, Death, and Robots, I think, makes us think about is, what if life is different from what we know it? What if it could exist in ways and under conditions that we are not familiar with?
Yeah, that's what I love about this show, is it pushes your imagination.
Yes.
And pushes the boundaries of what's possible. So the first episode we wanted to talk about is called Bad Traveling. Mm-hmm. And It's about, I don't even really know how to describe this episode, like most of Love, Death, and Robot episodes, but it's about this ship with a crew.
Old-timey sailboat.
Yes, sailing. Definitely an old-timey vibe with this episode.
Yeah.
And they are basically trying to survive with this humongous sea creature in the, what is the basement of a ship called? The hull.
The hull is
below
the
deck. Below deck?
Yes,
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, anyway. I know about starboard and port, but that's about all the ship terminology I know.
Yeah, I don't have any. But so this creature keeps like killing people. Like they need to like, they have to like sacrifice a crew member in order to for the rest of the crew to keep surviving. And anyway, there's a whole other layer of like this one guy is being very deceitful and
gets everyone killed. So basically it's this crab like creature, all right, that is attacking this ship. And it ends up in the ship basement or whatever.
Below deck.
Below deck. And they're able to lock it in. All right. Mm-hmm. And they realize that as long as the creature is fed, it's not going to try to bust its way out.
Yeah.
And the ship's captain basically goes down because he kind of pulled the short straw. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up actually communicating with this creature.
Yes.
And it turns out this giant crab-like murder monster is actually intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And has babies on the way.
Right. That's why it's trying to feed itself.
Yes, that's why it's trying to feed itself. And after realizing that this creature is intelligent and can be reasoned with, the ship's captain basically makes a deal with the creature. And then hijinks ensue, but not hijinks. This is a very serious episode and it was a lot of tragedy, but hijinks ensue.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think this episode is a reminder that, first of all, in real life, there is a lot we don't know about the ocean. We actually know, I think it's like, we actually know more about space than we know about our own ocean, the very depths of the ocean. And something like 75% of the ocean is still unmapped.
Completely unmapped. Yep.
Like, there are, and we just have not even been to the farthest, deepest depths of the ocean. We just have no idea what's there.
No light reaches down there.
Yeah.
And we don't have anything that can survive those kinds of pressures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we do know that there are creatures down there.
Yes.
Because parts of them keep floating up.
Right. Exactly. And I think they're a lot bigger than we might think they are.
Yes. There is evidence of giant squid.
Mm-hmm.
Squid that are the size basically of a submarine. Of like a military submarine that exists down there.
So
and,
wild.
And we know that based on like squid tentacles, parts of their bodies that have floated up to levels where we can actually see it, you know? And then from that extrapolating out, like, well, how big would the actual squid have to be if it has a tentacle that's this long? And so, I mean, these are ginormous creatures that live at the absolute depths of our ocean and are able to survive under pressures that would turn us flat as a pancake.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And so that was immediately what I thought of.
Yes.
I'm like, I feel like this is very plausible. And you know, like, I mean, just there's all these accounts of like the Loch Ness Monster, Moby Dick, blah, blah, blah. Like those could very much be true and real.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that this episode, Bad Traveling, made me think of is that a creature like this, which they call the Thanopod, and I did a quick Google search and I don't think it's a real word, that a creature like that could exist and actually exist and be somewhere in the depths of our ocean where we have not made contact or communicated with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm personally very convinced that octopi are much smarter than we give them credit for. And
so smart.
And the only reason why humanity is still at the top of the food chain is because octopi don't work together.
Oh.
All right. I think once they start working together, we're screwed.
If only they knew the value of collaboration, they could just take over the world. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. I was literally thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about just how pathetic humans are. And I mean, in many ways, but yes, physically too. Like, I was just sitting on my couch and one of my cats was just sleeping next to me while I was working. And we haven't had a chance to trim our cat's claws yet. So they're very sharp right now. And she literally, in her sleep, sometimes she just sort of stretches a paw out and she'll like put it on my arm.
Yeah.
So that's she just adorable, happened, it's very cute. She happened to just do that. But when she stretches, her claws come out a little bit too because she's stretching. And she just grazed my arm. I have this humongous scratch and started bleeding. I was like, this is pathetic. She did this to me in her sleep and I'm bleeding. Like, why? Like, humans, we don't have any sort of claws, tentacles, any sort of armor. Like, I'm thinking of armadillos, you know, or like turtles, like who have some sort of exterior shell. Like, I just, yeah, we're just so.
But you know what's even crazier to think about?
What?
Is that before we sort of developed agriculture, chances are we were much more capable of defending ourselves without tools and invention. It's been been shown that a human being does have the biological potential to be as strong as an orangutan.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. If we live the kind of lifestyle from birth that orangutans do, humans could be as strong as orangutans. And just for context, orangutans are very, very strong.
Right.
I mean, rip you in half and they're sleep strong.
Yeah. I guess that is sort of the story of Tarzan. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I didn't even think about that. But yes, Tarzan could be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay then.
So yes, but still, we are very, very pathetic. Yeah. And the notion of theropods and creatures and maybe even intelligent life at the bottom of our oceans seems very plausible to me, especially since you have octopi that don't live in the absolute depths of our oceans, who have shown themselves to be very, very smart and do things that we do not associate with animals, like problem solving, decorating their homes. I mean, these are, like they'll grab something pretty and like hang it up in their cave. Like they'll decorate, you know, that's like so that's cute. That's not something you typically associate with animal behavior. That is very specifically something we think of as human behavior, you know? Right. So the notion that an intelligent creature that is very large and vicious living at the bottom of our ocean seems very, very plausible to me.
Yeah. All right. The next episode we were going to talk about is called The Very Pulse of the Machine. Is that the full title?
The Very Pulse of the Machine.
Yes.
This is the episode that I was most excited to talk about.
Me too.
Triggers all my interests.
You can give a little description of it.
All right. So the Very Pulse of the Machine is about a couple of astronauts. Well, really about one astronaut who's exploring Io with her partner. And Io would be the first moon of Jupiter, so named after one of Hera's priestesses who became Zeus's lover and named by Galileo, who discovered Io with his telescope. And so these two astronauts in what I assume is a far future are exploring the surface of Io. And they end up in an accident. And one of the astronauts dies. The other one has to drag her body because her oxygen tank was damaged in the crash, in the accident. Mm-hmm. And she's got to use her dead partner's astronaut suit, spacesuit, to
so she just has this like tube that connects to her partner's oxygen tank thing.
Yes.
That's part of her suit. So she has to drag her partner's body like behind her on.
Yes, because the rover that they were traveling on is wrecked. She's trying to get back to base and to within communications range. Mm-hmm. And in that time, she's up communicating with the moon.
Well, first it's unclear because she's also injured her arm. So at one point, the pain from that injury is too much. So her spacesuit.
She's taking drugs.
Yeah. So her spacesuit like allows for you to like inject yourself with morphine or something. And mm-hmm. so she's like high at this point and dragging her dead fellow astronaut and just trying to survive. So at first you just think she's hallucinating.
Yeah.
And she does seem to be a little bit. That's why also I thought this episode was a bit confusing too, because at mm-hmm. the end I was like, I don't actually know what was real and what was not real.
Yes. I rather liked that notion as well. Like you really could interpret it either way. Mm-hmm. Like, is this astronaut hallucinating that she's talking to this moon that she's standing on? Uh-huh. Or did her state of mind and the drugs that she take make her sort of more open to receiving communications mm-hmm. from this moon? But in terms of the topic of today's episode, let's just assume that the communication is actually happening.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So what did you think about that, Lena? Do you think that's possible?
That this planet can just be its own alive thing?
Yeah. Or that,
this moon, I mean.
This moon can be, can be a machine.
Yeah, I mean, so that's it touches on this whole topic of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I think that like so many TV shows are like Westworld is all about like when you've constructed artificial intelligence to be so intelligent and to just be kind of like, it's like when you've made like robots and machines that have become so smart on their own, like, and they're exhibiting behavior that is similar to living creatures. Mm-hmm. Are they then themselves living? Like the movie with Robin Williams, Bicentennial Man.
Yep.
Remember? Like he starts off as this android robot that's just there to like be a helper and maid and cook and whatever for this one family. But over the decades, you know, he becomes more and more sophisticated. He then gets like his image changed so that he looks more human and stuff. And then by the end, you know, he's basically advocating saying that like, I am alive. I am a living thing. And by the end, then eventually he does like die like hundreds of years later or whatever. And then he is considered to be like a living thing. So it's like, why not? You know, like, I mean, I also think, I can totally see that happening.
Right. And what's crazy about this episode is the discussion that the moon has with this astronaut, sort of guiding her through, like, this moon has an iron ore. This moon has high levels of sulfur and sulfate and an electromagnetic field and electricity that's passing through it. What does this sound like? And eventually the astronaut's like, it sounds like a machine, you know? And the thing is that these are actually all qualities that Io has. Mm-hmm. Its surface is covered in sulfur and it does have a highly magnetic core, and it actually has such a high magnetic core that it expands. This moon makes Jupiter's magnetic field like 1.5 times or something larger than it would be otherwise.
Dang, that's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is the most dense moon in our solar system. And it's physically a little bit smaller than our moon, mm-hmm. but it has a much higher density. I think the only thing about this episode where I was like, is that apparently Io's gravity is 0.183 g.
Uh-huh.
So 0.18 of the Earth's gravity, which is why is this astronaut having such a hard time dragging her friend's body?
Yeah.
You know,
saying she should be like floating.
And, practically, yeah.
Yeah.
Practically floating.
Well, so, maybe that is would be difficult still to like move forward.
Yeah. Maybe, but like everything should be lighter, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They messed up there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a little. A little bit of a mess up there. But I don't know. That whole notion to me seems like, you know, a spontaneously existing computer in these conditions, why couldn't that happen?
Yeah.
You know, the human brain is neurons, but it's really the electricity in our nerves and in our neurons that make us able to think.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's very, yeah. Everything about space to me, I very much have the opinion like, yeah, why not? Like, I don't know what's fucking out there. You don't know either. Like, why not? Like, the same thing with the ocean, right? Like the depths of the ocean to way out in outer space. Like, why not?
Yeah.
We are very limited to.
I mean, the other thing that space makes me think about is scale. You know, when we're looking for life outside of the planet Earth, we're in general thinking about things that fit our physical scale, you know, in terms of the size that we are. The Earth seems very, very big. All right. Yeah. But literally three Earths could fit inside just the great red storm, the red eye of Jupiter.
Yeah.
Three planet Earths. All right. In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I don't mean like Douglas Adams's books, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but then within that, the actual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy apparently starts off with space is big, like really, really big. Like imagine the biggest thing you can possibly imagine and space is bigger, you know? There's no reason why life or computers or anything really needs to exist at our scale.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see any reason why a computer could not spontaneously exist as a whole moon or a whole planet. You know, everything in space, everything in physics and life in the universe, it's a matter of perspective and scale. You know, it's all relative. All right. Yeah. I mean, this moon is smaller than our moon, but like from the perspective of the sun, like I'm sure at that scale, like what does it matter if it's the size of the moon or the size of a desktop human computer? You know, it's relatively the same size, relatively, you know, margin of error. I don't see any reason why that couldn't be. And the possibilities of that, I think it would be amazing, you know? What if we did discover something like this, that we landed on Io and it turns out that the electricity looks on Io, the ionized energy and everything, looks a lot like neurons firing in a human brain. You know, like what if we did come across that? You know, how would we and also how would we interact with such a creature or such a machine, you know? I mean, I think technically Io would still be, in this case, the very pulse of the machine, I think it would still be considered a machine based on the current definition that we have of life. So unless there's some sort of, you know, response to outside stimuli, we would consider it more of like an artificial intelligence, except not artificial, just intelligence, but not necessarily alive.
Right.
Is that something could be?
I mean, maybe. I don't. Why not, Aman? Why not?
Yeah. Intelligence without life.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that the more we explore these spaces, you know, and go so far into wherever, then I mean, like the more reason there will probably be to redefine these categories that we have, to broaden them or create completely new categories from scratch, you know, who knows? But, you know, this is really reminding me of, what was it, just a few weeks ago that NASA released all those images from the James Webb Space Telescope?
Right.
And you're just like, holy shit. Like, you know, there was one image that had hundreds of galaxies in there.
Yeah.
Like galaxies, you know? Like,
I love seeing the comparison photos.
Yes.
Where Hubble took a shot of something and then the James Webb telescope took the exact same a photograph of the exact same location and how much more all of a sudden became visible.
Yes. Yeah.
And that blows my mind.
Right.
And that's wild. Looking through a telescope it's like time travel. It's looking into the past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing that blows my mind.
Right. How space and time and all that will. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot. Cool. And then the third episode we wanted to talk about is called Mason's Rats.
Yes.
And this is basically about some like farmer dude who has a rat infestation problem.
Yes.
And he keeps ordering these like very high tech drones.
Pest control.
Yeah. But these rats are also highly evolved. intelligent and evolved. And
yes.
They keep popping up out of nowhere. And there's like an army of them. Wait, can you remind me what happens in the end again?
So, I mean, it starts off with Mason, the guy, entering into his barn, shooting a rat. And then all of a sudden there's a bunch of rats who start shooting crossbows at him.
Yeah.
All right. So that's how the episode starts. And right. He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then he calls up this company, Trap Tech, and orders, you know, extermination devices. And then, you know, the rats keep defeating them. He then gets a super advanced one that's very, very like Scorpion Terminator like, you know, and it ends with the rats are at war. All right. With this Terminator machine that is just murdering them. And they're doing whatever they can to kill this machine, including like driving tanks and stuff into it. All right. And finally, it ends with Mason entering, seeing this bloodshed and seeing these rats like suffering and in a very human way, you know, seeing
like the piles of rats' bodies are there.
And but just, he also is seeing the fear in their faces and their determination to stave off this enemy and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he shoots the TT-15.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he becomes friends with the rats and they share a drink.
Yeah. It was a very optimistic ending. I wish more conflicts ended that way.
Yeah. I mean, he was also the cause of this war.
I mean, yeah, but I'm saying I just wish more conflicts ended with them reconciling. Yeah.
Yes. That would be nice.
Yeah. But yeah, that was another. So, I mean, we wanted to talk about this episode because it's just, it's interesting to think about. I think we often, looking back on history and stuff, we can clearly see how humans have evolved.
Yes.
Over many generations, millennia, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's also interesting to think about how animals have evolved too.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like you were saying earlier, you think octopi would be taking over the world if they just learned to like cooperate and collaborate with one another. Like,
absolutely.
And who knows, maybe that will happen.
That could.
Yeah. So that's kind of what this episode is reminding me of too, is just like these rats were clearly not rats you see today.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. These are rats that have become highly intelligent to the point of tool making and using tools. Like at the beginning of the episode when Mason shoots the first rat, he picks it up and it's wearing a belt with tools attached to it. You know, tools made of like bones and other scraps and things like that. I don't know if you caught this at the beginning of the episode though, but he's got grain. And the rats have eaten into this barrel, all right? And the grain is pouring out of this barrel. But the label on the barrel says GMO with, like, a needle pointing, like, sticking into a symbol of grain, of wheat.
Oh.
All right? And so it's kind of implied that these rats evolved because of
the grain.
Because of the grain that they ate.
Yeah, that's another thing too. It's like there's so many things that we as humans do for, sometimes it's for convenience, efficiency, whatever it is. And we don't think about the impact that it has, the ripple effects that it has throughout our ecosystem.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I personally have some opinions about GMO where I'm like, what's the big fucking deal? Because we've been genetically modifying all of our agricultural products since the beginning of agriculture. We just know how to do it faster and more efficiently now and with higher precision. But like corn originally was small, round, and purple.
Yeah. Right?
It was not like that's, and it has intentionally over the centuries been forced to be longer, bigger, and yellow.
Yeah. It's actually really interesting if you look at, I don't know, like old paintings, like Renaissance paintings or whatever, and if people have painted fruits, you see how like they're so different from what they look like now.
Yes.
Like watermelons didn't look like that. You know, I don't know. I'm just picking random fruits right now, but that's also interesting to see too. Just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, so anyway, this episode still implied that it was, that it's human interference that has led to these rats evolving. And our little side discussion on GMOs is neither here or there in terms of the plot of the story.
Right.
But that's what's implied. And actually what I thought was interesting is that rats have actually adapted to humans. Rat's ideal living conditions is now a large city.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not
that's where you'll
wild.
Usually yeah, that's where you'll usually see rats.
Yeah.
Especially in New York City.
Yes. Especially in New York City. But in general, like you can't just take a bunch of rats and drop them in the middle of the woods. They will die instantly.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. How that has changed. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. What did you think about the idea of these rats sort of becoming more and more sophisticated and intelligent?
I mean,
Do you think that's something that could happen?
Again, why not, Aman? Why not? Yeah, I mean, I think, sure, why not? I think it totally could happen. It's also kind of terrifying because I know this is bad, but I think we've been conditioned to just think of – we just are like, ugh, when it comes to rats.
Right.
And so I also find it a little terrifying, specifically with rats doing that.
Yes. Yes, that they are disease carrying. They've been blamed unjustly, apparently, for the bubonic plague. I think what was it? It was like they figured out it wasn't rats that spread the Black Death. It was something else it ended up being, right?
What was it? Was it just humans?
No, I can't remember. I don't think it was just humans.
I feel like I remember reading that, but now I have to look it up.
Right.
Oh, wait, here. If you just start typing rats didn't, and then it says they didn't spread the plague. It says, specifically, historians have speculated that the fleas on rats are responsible for the estimated 25 million plague deaths between 1347 and 1351.
The fleas on rats?
Oh, however, a new study suggests that rats weren't the main carriers of fleas and lice that spread the plague. It was humans.
Okay. All right. Obviously. Yeah. So obviously we did this to ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
As Again. Per usual. Yeah. As per usual. Okay. Cool. Well, on that note, I mean, I feel like we covered it.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's an exploration on life as we don't know it.
Yeah.
Currently.
Currently. Because everything can change. And it probably will.
Yeah. Well, thanks as always for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.